This is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker show here on Channel Radio in association with Biz Radio. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the stunkingly gorgeous Jill Serkin.
Hello.
Hello. You've been remiss. You haven't been catching up with the Twitter.
I know.
I've just found over 100 tweets that you've missed so far.
I know. Well, some of them
are conversations that you started.
Go on then, start off.
Well,
give me a clue.
Well, some real ones. We've got Paragon Drones, looking forward to the show, and a mention would be great, thank you. So do follow Paragon. They operate drones. But they do some interesting stuff, and their background's military, and they were involved in removing munitions and things. But they also do drones in confined spaces, so indoor drones and pipeline drones and stuff. Fascinating stuff. Go and have a look at it. Collector's Buddy, Buddy underscore museum on the Twitter. Oh, dear, Martin. Says, I went for a COVID-19 test this morning. Feel like, but I'm sure it's just a bad cold.
You don't get colds in the summer, do you?
Well, not anymore. You're not allowed to have a cold anymore, have you?
No.
Everything's COVID.
I haven't had a cold for years.
No. He says, have a fab show. I am tuning in. Well, I hope you get better soon, and I hope it's nothing too serious, Martin. Do hang in there.
Yeah, he sounded quite perky an hour ago. He must have been going downhill.
Martin White's been on. We were talking about him earlier.
Yeah.
He says, Jules, Paul, enjoying the banter. I've just had to complete a statement of honour in order to enter France. He says, does that now mean I'm a fully fledged member of the French Foreign Legion? I should think it does, mon Dieu.
Mon Dieu. So he must be going off camping. Yeah, he says he's enjoying the banter, you see.
Yeah. Don't know what that's all about.
Another fan.
Yeah. And Martin Reeves says he enjoyed the cheesy tunage.
And Collector's Buddy, I think he's alluding to my, I don't know, he might be alluding to my green smoothie.
Oh.
Because he said just the thought of that would make me feel a bit grim.
Well, he's obviously contracted something just thinking about it.
I'm sending him a picture of my green smoothie. It was absolutely delicious.
Yeah.
It's not my normal one. My normal one is a cacao one, so it's quite chocolatey.
Yeah.
But he says, yeah, just the thought of that on a normal day would make... But I don't know, he might be talking something completely. I can't see the gist of it. And my timeline is full of people talking about... COVID vaccines at the moment. So I'm just scrolling through very, very quickly. I need to mute some conversations.
Well, it would help, yeah.
I know. Kent Tweet Ups, hello to you, lovely people.
Intune PR, Darren, the show is in progress and it's going to have to be on catch up for us now because he's missed the first bit and he wants to catch up. So, you need to catch up, Darren, because it's worth listening to. Let me tell you, you will enjoy it.
Big shout out to Ken Heron, who's over there in lovely Florida.
Mm.
I expect he's lounging with a crocodile.
Do you think he's lounging?
Yeah, he'll have a little pina colada, won't he, under
next to an
alligator.
Next to an alligator.
Crocodile or alligator? I don't
alligators.
Know.
Alligators. They're alligators.
Yeah, he'll be there. Doing some work.
They're gators.
And I think Florida have done not too badly with... Well, no, they've been quite bad, haven't they, with COVID?
Florida didn't lock down and they don't wear masks and they have been not playing with the rest of them. There is a report that there's been a massive outbreak of COVID cases. I don't know what the numbers are.
Okay. I'm still scrolling through my Twitter, by the way. So.
But Florida and Texas both refused to play.
Although Ken Heron told me way back last year that he had an allotted time to go down from his condominium to his pool area. He was only allowed to go there and allotted, and then he had to go back up to his condominium.
Right.
So they must have been...
Well, they did it originally, but then they...
Got bored.
They got bored and stopped doing it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who else? So we mentioned Chips and Dinks, didn't we?
Yeah.
Because we don't like to not mention anyone if they've tweeted.
Right. We're going to talk to Lawrence in a minute, so you can read one more email.
That's nice of you. Okay, so we can book Matt now. This is Marsh Networking, our dear friends. They are on the Marsh. And it's a final reminder. It's mañana, the 18th of August, 3ws.marshnetwork.co.uk to reserve your place. And the speaker is Lee Harrington from the Federation of Small Business. And they'll be telling you all about the support that the FSB provides for small businesses, and they may also get a balloon story or two. We will have an update on how they will take networking forward and a discussion topic. Maybe they're going to go up in a balloon.
A balloon story?
Yeah, could be a balloon up going up in the air, couldn't it?
It could be.
Or hot air.
Or they could just be making a sausage dog out of balloons.
They could be. That's a bit of magic.
Yeah.
I see what you did there.
See what I did there? See, this show isn't just thrown together.
Laurie Day.
It's produced within an inch of its life, this show.
I've got a little white rabbit in my handbag.
Have you?
Yeah. It's going to come out in a minute.
Oh, right.
And something behind Laurie's ear as well. Look.
Yeah.
Oh, it's headphones.
Right. Well, shall we introduce Laurie
properly
and tell you what she's wittering on about?
Yeah.
It's an absolute pleasure to welcome onto the show Lawrence Day. Laurie of Cognitas Global. Laurie, thank you so much for joining us. Let's just put to bed the bit of waffle that she was giving about magic, because people won't know what we're talking about there.
Well, I guess I'll explain throughout the story through my journey, but I'm an amateur magician.
Right.
And when I sort of travel the world and do some work before COVID, you know, I tend to engage people rather than give them a pen or a USB stick. You know, engaging people in countries that I work in is very important, building the trust.
Yeah.
So I had my designer, Nick, design some playing cards
with
our View 360 platform logo on, had them made in China, and with a view to sort of, you know, giving those out when I travelled the world. Of course, COVID struck, so I've got a few boxes left at the office, but I bought some cards in today because I thought that, I wanted to give some to Helen for her charity, hoping that they may bring some joy to some of the people in Zambia. And obviously I've given you a couple of packs.
Yeah.
And why we're laughing is because, obviously, within the cards is a QR code that allows anybody who has the cards to see about six of my professional magician friends do tricks with those playing cards, and there's another guy called John Kerry who does a 3-hour zero to hero that takes somebody who hasn't handled cards right through a whole load of sleights and stuff. So, you know, magic plays a great part and has played a great part for a few years now in my journey of travelling the world.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's start with that. Because you've got, despite the businesses that you run, which are fabulous, you've actually got an incredibly interesting background before that. So let's hear a little bit about Laurie and a little bit about your background.
Well, if anybody had said to me when I was 16 and a half and went to join the RAF as a very young man, I would have been doing what I'm doing now, having reached the age of 60. I wouldn't have believed them, really. And I was in the RAF for 3.5 years, and then I went to public service for 30 years and retired in 2010, having had a reasonably interesting time and seen some very strange things. But when I left in 2010, you know, I still wanted to work, and I took my particular skill set, which was within the criminal justice sector, and I went to work for the EU as a consultant for 2 years in Northern Cyprus on a program that was designed to assist with reunification of the North and the South.
Right.
But I was also being invited by other sort of international donors to go out and do presentations around my subject matter topic area, which was sort of anti-money laundering and so forth. And then really, you know, 11 years down the line, I have visited 35 countries personally numerous times. I've been on about 500 sort of missions that cover sort of training and other capacity building. And, you know, I'm now running one company that has about 40 consultants in there. We've delivered training in person in about 60 countries across five continents. And since COVID, we've delivered training online to people in over 60 countries.
Wow. What kind of training is it, Laurie?
So when I formed the company AML Consulting Global, which is still exists and still is one of the primary vehicles for delivery capacity building for all these international donors like the Foreign Office and the United Nations, EU and Interpol and National Crime Agency. We've been delivering training really focused around the criminal justice sector. So we've been working in countries that are coming out of emerging from conflict or also still in conflict. So, you know, sadly, Afghanistan, Iraq, the Balkans that emerged from conflict, really around counterterrorism, anti-money laundering, intelligence, you know, all those type of topics, really, anti-corruption.
Yeah, because I imagine that countries emerging from that kind of thing, fairly lawless, and there's not a lot of infrastructure, so a lot of crime kind of gets embedded right at that point.
Yeah, the whole aid budget, really, well, not the whole aid budget, but a significant part of the aid budget goes to supporting the re-establishment of rule of law.
Yeah.
So rebuilding, you know, the criminal justice infrastructure, training prosecutors, judges, police, customs, all the people responsible for implementing rule of law. So we've been working in those countries, countries that are coming out of political transition. So I've worked a lot in the in Central Asia, in the Stans, Africa, lots of countries where corruption is endemic. Yeah. And, you know, I must say one of the things that really humbled me, I mean, I saw a lot in the 30 years I worked in public service, but I've really been humbled by quite a lot I've seen since I've left. And really that's inspired me, I think, to take myself and my companies in the direction that, that we have.
Right. Okay. It is, isn't it? When you visit some of these places, that, you know, because they're the kind of places that you don't normally visit. I have to say, I just said that, and then I saw on Twitter yesterday a chap, a British chap, 23 odd, who went, "Oh my God, I came on holiday to Afghanistan and I'm stuck now." And you're thinking, blimey, that is not where I would have chosen to take a holiday.
Well, only a few months ago, we were working with a number of people from Afghanistan developing a program to implement a vocational pathway training program over 2 years for the anti-corruption unit out there. And, you know, I was working very closely and personally with these people. And obviously now I can only think of the what's, you know, happened. The project obviously has come to a halt because of what's happening. Sure. But my thoughts really go out to those people that you see there at the moment.
Yeah. So you must, in all the places that you've travelled to and all the things you've done, you must have seen quite a lot of interesting things going on. We won't get you to reveal everything that you've come across while there. Moving from that, I guess at the moment it's quite difficult to deliver those training programs for one reason or another, you know, with pandemic and the thing like Afghanistan, things happening and so on and so forth, and can be quite dangerous as well, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the whole donor community has stopped traveling really, and everything's been done online now, which is not really satisfactory. I mean, I think everybody knows that the Zoom fatigue is kicking in. You know, we've got the platforms, although they're great video conferencing platforms, Zooms and Teams are not designed to give learning. People are less engaged for various reasons, and you know, the overwhelming evidence from evaluations we do and training needs analysis I do for organizations is that people want this re-engagement with people. They want to see people again in person. There's a lot you can do to make that possible online beyond you know, people just sitting there in their shorts and their tie and their jacket with the dog barking and the Amazon van turning up. But you know,
that always happens to me. Soon as I go live on Zoom, there's a ring at the doorbell.
I mean, we are, you know, I've got projects or booked right through to December. We're going out to Jordan. We've got other projects in other countries. Hopefully we're going to be able to travel. But there is an overwhelming desire for this really to get back to normal.
Jordan is a country I've always wanted to visit. You know, it's just beautiful, isn't it? I would imagine in parts. It's been a bit destroyed, I know.
Yeah, it is a stunning place. I mean, I've been overwhelmed, really. I mean, you know, I know Helen was talking about Zambia. I mean, that really touched my heart. I was there probably 5 or 6 years ago now, and I remember just being in a hotel, and I was saying to Helen earlier that there was this, you know, these young girls that were immaculately dressed in pressed shirts and uniform, you know, and we were speaking to the staff over the week, and I was just like, you know, almost heartbroken to, you know, to hear with a smile that they're walking to work 5 miles and they're being paid 35p an hour.
And they look absolutely pristine.
Absolutely. And no one, you know, it's hard to tell people in this country, you know, when people have got their mobile phones and Xboxes and, you know, all the stuff that people get, what people haven't got and how lucky people are, really. It's not until you truly travel to these places that you experience that, you know, the wealth and poverty, you know, and interspersed against each other.
So. It is, and you almost want to say it should be mandatory for people in this country to go visit some of these places rather than sit at home moaning that they haven't got the latest iPhone 13 or whatever it is.
Or some olives. They've run out of olives. Yeah. It's just what I was doing in the first lockdown.
Oh, were you?
You know, I was going, I can't get olives. You know, it's just pathetic, isn't it? And I know when we were in Cape Town, that the scale of the townships, you know, when you're driving is just unbelievable, isn't it? Because they go on and on and on and on. And there's a chef, Petrus, who has a pub near Tunbridge Wells called The Poet at Mapfield. Is that near Tunbridge Wells?
Yep.
Yeah.
And he grew up in the townships, and it's amazing. But the stories, you know, to get out of those townships is extremely difficult.
Mm. Well, I the Balkans is a place I've worked in, all over the Balkans, and I've probably been to Croatia probably up to 60 times for work, and before their accession into the EU, and holiday a lot afterwards. But, you know, I remember visiting some places where, you know, like many people, I was probably drinking in a wine bar at the time the Balkan was going, just seeing it on telly in Kosovo, not really paying too much attention, really understanding. But then having worked with these people, understood these people, looked at the history, and then been to places that still show the decimation and the bullet holes and everything, and then come back and then looked at it on YouTube and stood in the places I see in YouTube with the war and people shooting at each other and everything. You can't comprehend that until you've really been there and experienced and then just look back.
I remember the rising of the Tahrir Square, and we were in Cairo, and because my new husband, being a journalist, was right there, I just went and hid in the hotel. It was just mad, you know, people shooting everything and on bonnets of cars and stuff. Not so long ago, but he was there and found it obviously things to write and take photos.
It's quite inspiring, really, and I think probably, you know, that's the thing that really has moved me forward in what we've done. Now, I mean, clearly, I run three companies now. AML Consulting was and it remains the dominant company dealing with all the international stuff. But you know, myself and the people that work for me and the consultants that have been AML Consulting Global, working all over the world for me, you know, who've seen this, professional people taking their skills back. You know, they've all been inspired by the attitude of the people that are trying to fight back against the corruption, you know, that trying to get back to having a civil society, rule of law. You know, if they pay the taxes, they know that it's going to be spent by the government and not stolen by the government.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's really inspired me really to take this whole thing about learning and the way that we've given back. Well, I hope we've been seen given back, because I think if what we'd like to do is walk away every time you deliver something feeling that you've just been a tiny, tiny part of the change, you know, and Helen's nodding.
Same with Helen,
right.
Yeah.
You know, you can't solve the world's problems, but if you feel that somebody will come up and go, you know what, that's really changed my life, that's the best course I've been on, or that's really going to help us, or just, you know, that is enough. That's enough. You know?
I mean, this is my opinion on those kind of things, which is that quite often governments or big institutions come out with grandiose plans to do things, but they tend to be sound bites and virtue signalling. You know, they go, oh, we're going to do a programme here, and they may even put a couple of £1 million into it or something, but it's just that. What actually happens is what happens on the ground with individual people making a difference. And it's that old aphorism, isn't it? How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. Yeah. You can't come along and make a global statement that says, we're going to educate every Zambian kid. Now get on with it. You know, it takes people like Helen, it takes people like Laurie to go and do something and meet half a dozen, a dozen, two dozen, 100 people locally, some of whom will be inspired to carry that work on. And that's the thing that will eventually make a difference.
The sustainability, and you've got to be seen to have the passion, because, you know, there have been plenty of people, you know, and in my early days when I didn't understand the culture and how it really worked, and I was probably guilty, not deliberately, but just of not being as respectful as I should have been and understanding. But, you know, I've learned to how that you should go into a country. You know, we're always the guest in somebody's country.
Yeah.
We're not the experts. We share experience. We can bring new skills and knowledge and try and help people. But the people that live in the country are the experts. They live there. So you have to respect that and treat them that. So you can never go in, well, we do this better than you. We, you know, we can tell you how to do this. Well, you can't take that approach. I mean, you know, you've got to learn to say please, thank you, hello in their language. I mean, I can speak 7 languages. I caveat that by saying that's not fluently. What I can say in seven languages is that I'm sorry, but I don't speak your language. So what happens is, you know, when I stand up at the beginning and say, you know, Dobro jutro, zhamia, alina, govorim, hrvatski, that means, good morning, I'm terribly sorry, but I don't speak Croatian. Right. Well, that's great, because everybody's laughing, you develop the relationship, and they're thinking,
he's trying.
Speaking
he's trying.
Fluent Croatian, telling us he can't speak Croatian.
Yeah.
But it's about, you know, building that bond and respect and so forth. And as I say, that's the philosophy that we've moved into the way that we train people.
Okay. And you're right, aren't you, that, you know, quite often in the West, we arrive somewhere and try to impose the West on people. And it just doesn't work.
Cucumber sandwiches on the lawn.
Well, yeah, it just doesn't work. Well, it all depends where you are.
Yeah.
I spent some time doing training. I used to do leadership training. Doing training in Sri Lanka at the University of Colombo. And that was the opposite, you know, because Sri Lanka is still very colonial.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they were more British than I was. Yeah.
I stayed at the Bulawayo Club. It was, I said, oh, you know, could I have a glass of brandy? Certainly, madame. Would you like a wee tot? Just the one tot, madam? Or the crystal glasses? And, you know, you go outside and it's a shipwreck, you know. everybody should stay at the Bulawayo Club. It's, we were the only people there.
Well, fun enough, when I was last in Zimbabwe, which was 2000, we were due to go to Bulawayo and the Foreign Office stopped us.
Yeah.
Because it got a bit naughty.
It's not a great town when you're outside.
Cool. So, Laurie, you've talked a lot about the training that you've done in all these incredible places, looking at criminal justice system and stuff like that. You've got other businesses.
Yeah.
Just kind of fill us in on what's going on around that.
Well, so really what happened in 2017 was that, you know, I saw the way that, you know, there wasn't this sustainability. The donors now look to a more longer-term sustainability, take a different approach to the projects. There was nothing really based on learning and development. And what was really frustrating was is that, you know, we were going in and trying to train people that had been disengaged by other people with the million words on a PowerPoint, so many you couldn't see the white background. But there was lots of intelligent people that were craving to be educated in different ways. So what I did in short was I took a principle that is known, an immersive learning concept, and my coder, James Robinson, the director of my company, between us, we designed an immersive learning platform called View 360 Global. And that really is, you know, it just replaces the tabletop exercise. It computerizes it. It's not a learning management system. It has to be, you know, delivered by people that are facilitating. And originally, we took that to 17 countries, and we were training many different people in different languages. And where we are now, really, is that down the line, is that Cognitas Global is the company that I formed really to take on that platform and to bring our experience back to the UK and other markets using the platform. And if I just say that the platform, very difficult to describe, what does it do? It connects people no matter where they are in the world. Let's say we had 15 people in 15 different countries.
Yep.
We have an inbuilt video conferencing functionality. It's multilingual. We can bring those 15 people together. We can put them in 5 breakout rooms, and providing they speak a common language, say English, they can all type in their own language, which will appear in their own language. They share a screen, a common screen, and as they type in one language, say Arabic, it will translate into Russian, and it will translate into Chinese, and as the Chinese types, it translates back.
That's so clever.
But what that does, and what we do is we run this sort of tabletop scenario where we feed them mixed media, so video, audio, you know, PDFs, documents, and so forth. And what that does is enable people to engage with each other collaboratively, feel like they're being trained in person because they're actually just, you know, in these video breakout rooms. We bring them back into a common debriefing area in between as the exercise progresses. And where we've gone with that, and it, as I say, it's nothing like an LMS. To my knowledge, no one else has got anything like this in the world. I mean, there are immersive learning platforms, but none that I know of that have this, the capabilities that we have with translation channels and the multilingual capability. But if I come back to the UK and the English use, you know, what we've realised now is that, you know, we can use it very successfully in the UK market. So, for instance, Network Rail are one of our licence holders. We've been working with them to deliver critical incident training for their staff, accredited. So two of my companies are accredited under Skills for Justice, which means that we are an approved training centre by an academic body. So what we deliver is delivered to a certain standard.
Sure, yeah.
And we have, you know, HMRC at Customs. We've delivered crisis management training for IT companies, for the ship's registry. We've done insider threat training for a group of banking people and lottery people and so forth. So we use this now really for crisis management. We're working with on a charity basis on it because it's important to me that I give back to the community. So we're working with a school to develop some crisis management stuff to blend the tool into their curricula, and we're also starting a relationship with the RNLI and their college to try and get the platform working to deliver some perhaps leadership training and so forth.
Okay. Forgive me if this is a daft question, but I'm trying to build a picture of this in my mind.
Sure.
So you've got this fantastic platform that does all this wonderful stuff, and you're using it with various organisations. Do you as an organisation provide the training material, or do you so let's just pick someone at random, whether they are a customer or not, it doesn't matter. Let's say it's HMRC.
Yeah.
So HMRC said, right, we need to use your platform here. We need to talk to a bunch of people out there about why they're getting IR35 wrong or something. Yeah. nothing going on there. Using your platform, would they then expect you to deliver the content and material, or do you partner with them to do that?
No, that's a good question, Paul. So we have a couple of models around that. So people can either buy the license and develop their own materials, HMRC do actually,
right,
and they use it to train staff throughout the UK. And Network Rail have the license, but we also assist and produce the material with, right, Network Rail. Big organisation, different exercises. I mean, we're running an exercise in September for 50 Network Rail people.
Right, okay.
Crisis management, but then we have other companies that come to us on a one-off, say, can you work with us to design an exercise? We design the material, and so, for instance, we had a company, an insure tech company, that are based around Europe. They look after a very prominent mobile phone provider, plus one of the challenge banks, their platforms. They said, can you run a ransomware exercise for us? So I work with their head of IT security. We built the exercise bespoke to their needs, and they provided some material. We generated other stuff, and we ran the exercise for them. And that's generally sort of what we can do. So,
right,
you know, and again, you know, I should say that none of this is multi-zillion, £1,000 stuff. You know, it's all that, you know, my philosophy is not about, you know, I come from a different world where I'm not a commercial beast. I mean, obviously, I run companies, but my question is, what's the project? How interesting is it? And then the next question, the last question, is about the money.
Yeah.
And there is no point pricing yourself out of the market.
Absolutely.
There is no point,
yeah,
being greedy.
Yeah.
You know, we get a lot of satisfaction from delivering what we think is a great product for our clients and working closely with our clients. And that's why, you know, we've got organizations like Network Rail, like HMRC coming back to us,
sure,
you know, working with us. So
yeah, absolutely, yeah, it's all about the product,
yeah,
and the outcome. It's not about, you know, yeah, taking people. I get that fully. I got a tick a bit there when you started mentioning ransomware. I just
a nervous tick.
Yeah, no, it was a nervous tick. We got done 2 weeks ago. We got a ransomware attack.
Oh, right.
Yeah, destroyed half my computers.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
You should have had a chat with me about training before.
I should have done, shouldn't I? I didn't know they were going to do it, though, Laurie.
Well, that's a good point.
How common is it?
Well, it's very common. Yeah. And, you know, and this is the problem. People think, well, I'm not going to be touched by it. And historically, people took a gamble. It's not likely
to happen. Especially when you think you've got Macs as well. Because Macs
These were PCs. And as it happened, we had a lot of security in place. So although we ended up having to throw away six PCs and two servers because we couldn't rely on the fact they hadn't been infected. But that was the scope of it.
And the problem is, you know, and I did some work with about 18 months ago now, perhaps 2 years, with 25 small, medium enterprise charities. And I don't think any of them had, you know, business continuity plans. They were, you know, some of them were individuals that were, you know, one man with 10 jobs.
Yeah.
And the problem is, it's easy pickings now. It's very easy to attack any company, you know, and the trend has changed now in so much that where they would send you a demand for €500 to unlock your data, now it's like, you know, substantially more because they say, well, tomorrow your information is going to be on the dark web.
Yeah.
Now, that's important, obviously, for a lot of big companies, some of whom pay the ransom. But, you know, there's a lot of small, medium enterprise companies that are very vulnerable.
Yeah.
None of their staff have you know, perhaps had any training in phishing, and we all see it. But ultimately, you know, if I walked in, I guess, to a company and said, well, you know, what's your business continuity plan around a ransomware attack? You know, and the consequences for a business that in fact is really re-emerging out of COVID, suddenly to be hit and then plunged into that darkness is too much. And it happens. We read about it.
It does, and you're absolutely right. I mean, I don't want to go too far down this rabbit hole, but, you know, the whole cyber field is fraught. You know, we quite often see, as individuals, we see scams and phishing attacks.
Oh, I get texts most days. Yeah, yeah.
And most of us are aware of them. And I used to be head of security at a bank. So, you know, you're aware of it. But I often catch myself just about to press a button and going, hold on a minute, what exactly is this? And it's, you know, this is one of the problems with technology. That it's, you know, and it's one of the reasons, without getting too political about this, why I'm very unhappy about this politicisation of technology in terms of linking everything together. Because when it goes wrong, you've got no control over it at all, and it can go badly wrong. You know, you see, but you get silly things. Like, I got a phone call the other day from my bank, and they said, right, it's the bank. And I went, how do I know it's the bank? Well, because we told you.
Yeah, that's the trouble.
Well, you know, that's a really good point because, you know, if I talk about the social engineering stuff that goes on, and that is, you know, where people are making phone calls to, you know, the public, vulnerable people in particular, you know, let's face it, you know, if you look at the older generation, less familiar with some of the tactics and, you know, more trusting that are regularly victims, you know, people are creating an art out of social engineering nowadays, and we've been working with an organisation called CIFAS, that are quite a big organisation, the Credit Industry Fraud Avoidance System, and in fact we co-designed a day's workshop with the platform to some banks and you know, other people from the regulated sector, because the insider threat is a massive situation now. People working at home, their security, their social engineering, their vulnerability, you know, their mental health issues, all of which combine to hit the old risk, you know, meter right up. And again, you know, perhaps a big organisation can absorb some of that, not that they should, but it's the small organisations that can be hit drastically that aren't prepared again.
And it can finish you as an organisation. You know, it could completely finish you. Yeah, you're absolutely right. We actually got hit through a remote worker. That's how they accessed our system. They were using a computer from home, and it was their own computer rather than one of our works computers. Didn't have quite the full level of security it should have done, and they clicked on something and bang, gone.
And it's so easy to do. But again, I think the perception of many business owners is, you know, someone's always trying to pitch something nowadays, you know, always trying to pitch something. And, you know, we get tired of all the stuff that we see on LinkedIn and the spam emails that arrive every day. But, you know, people have to quantify the risks to their organisation now and the likelihood, or at least be educated about it as well. And, you know, people think, well, oh, yeah, but if I get a cyber company in or a company in, it's going to cost thousands of pounds. And, you know, do I want to spend thousands of pounds against potentially this never happening to me? Mm. Well, it doesn't have to cost thousands of pounds. And what you need, you know, dare I say, you know, and I'll shout out for our own company, we take a different approach. We're more interested in actually solving the problem for somebody, you know, working with them and not going in and telling them what they should and shouldn't do. And, you know, that's why really, as I say, Cognitas was formed, because, you know, what we're doing in now is we're moving back into the areas where we can bring a lot of experience and expertise, empathy, understanding, and not this very commercial attitude of, yeah, we've got a course that can do that for you. You know, learning management system courses won't prevent what we've just been talking about.
Sure.
There.
Yeah.
You know, you need somebody to talk to you about how it's going to be solved. You need to work out what your systems are, how they need to be protected, and how that person that helps you needs to help you.
Yeah, absolutely. No, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And you're absolutely right, Laurie. You know, as small business owners, you're inundated with stuff as well. Things like, you know, over the last few years, the government have introduced loads of stuff, you know, workplace pensions, GDPR, where, you know, all of a sudden, everybody's on a bandwagon trying to flog you, consultancy, you know, don't get caught by GDPR, come on out, consultancy.
Yeah.
And small business go, I'm trying to do plumbing here.
Yeah.
I just want to fix sinks.
Yeah.
And they quite often will, because it all sounds expensive and difficult, they'll just hide. Yeah, and go, oh, I'm going to ignore that and pretend it's never going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, even just, and again, it's not about trying to give somebody a full package, but just trying to educate people and raise their awareness before they decide what they want to do next is really important.
Yeah,
you know, and I'm not sure whether that always exists, because, again, people are more inclined to want to solve somebody's problem by offering them something that, at maximum price, you know, whether it's suitable or not. And again, if I come back to our philosophy, you know, everything that we've done really in the international world and what we do now is bespoke. You know, we don't have an off-the-shelf company, off-the-shelf course.
Product, yeah.
You know, we go in, you know, a lot. If you said to me, could you deliver us a course in this? Well, I'd be saying, well, yes, but what is it you really want? You know, what is it you want to achieve for your organisation? And then we look at what you expect out of it, what's going to drive that, you know, what are the behaviours you want from the people to demonstrate that you're getting that success, and then you design the training to that, you know, rather than, you know, and I see it regularly, you know, people go, yeah, we've got a course, we just come and deliver that, and somebody turns up and they've, you know, they're not probably interested, you know, they're just going to deliver the course. I mean, don't get me wrong, please, there's lots and lots of great training companies out there, lots and lots of committed good trainers. But there's lots of people there that would just, you know,
go for emotions.
Yeah. You know, and that's not right in this day and age. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Fascinating. Well, you've got a fascinating background anyway. You've done loads of really interesting things, Laurie. And I love the philosophy that you have about the delivery of the things that you do deliver. And the platform that you got sounds absolutely unbelievable. Mm. I mean, a really fantastic platform. What's next? Where are you heading now?
Well, I think, you know, what I've been trying to do really is you know, the international stuff continues. We're very busy. We've been very busy during COVID, but it's not satisfying. You know, we've had, you know, it's not about, you know, plenty of people are finding the disengagement. It doesn't matter how hard you try, the quality of what you deliver. You know, for Cognitas Global, which has got the platform, you know, what we're doing now is, you know, we're getting into partnerships, working with people to try and provide something that is, you know, the experiential learning that actually means that what you do on Friday or Monday to Friday or Friday on the course means on Monday you can put into practice. I've employed 5 people during COVID, actually.
Well,
you know,
done.
And I need to put a big shout out to my really committed staff of Nick, Ryan, Sean, James, Kira, a very wise person who is one of my directors, John, who gives me the balance as well. And what we did, we got a big training room. We bought the equipment because when we presented, we didn't want people to feel that we had the dog running around the back, the Amazon man, you know, and we're sitting there in shorts.
Yeah.
It's about being professional. It's about if you're paying for something, or even if we're, you know, providing that community pro bono service, it's an impression you leave somebody, you know, and what you try and do. So all we want to do really is to try and bring the platform maybe to a wider audience. You know, we've got things like travel security courses plan, where we're working with our, you know, accredited partner Skills for Justice. We got stuff planned around, you know, critical thinking is a great thing nowadays. Mm. I mean, I work with a great person, Nadia, who comes and delivers some critical thinking stuff on our international courses. Just something that is different, not routine, that's going to enhance people's lives, that's going to take them on the journey that they want to go on, not where somebody thinks they should be pushed, is the bottom line. And that's all. You know, we're all happy beavering away. I mean, yesterday I spent all day working with somebody from a civil society organisation in The Hague. I probably can't say too much about what we're doing because it's quite sensitive in terms of the topic. And I don't want to put a target on my back any more than I've got already over the last few years. But again, it's a very worthy cause. And we spent all yesterday designing immersive exercise for 15 United Nations people that are going to be coming across to be trained. So, you know, to me, that brings me a lot of joy. Sure. But like you, Paul, I know you run a few businesses. It's like trying to run
juggling
around, juggling, spinning plates, riding a unicycle, blindfolded. But you know what? It's
card tricks.
Well, you've got to learn a few card tricks for the next trip. But it's worthwhile.
Absolutely. It's like I was saying to Helen earlier, all these things, and you sound very similar to me, very similar to Helen, is an opportunity turns up out of the blue to, and you go, oh, that looks interesting, I'll do that. And before you know it, you're in a whole line of different stuff that you never intended to be, but you get kind of dragged into it, don't you? And then it takes over and you want to see it through and you want to do it, and then all of a sudden something else happens.
Well, my designer, if she's listening to this, Nick, she will be smiling now when I say, she's always saying to me, you need to learn the word no.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Because that's the hardest word. That's
actually a book that Helen might know called Women Who Can't Say No. And I don't know if there's a one, Men Who Can't Say No.
Well, that would be me, I think. That would be me, sadly.
Yeah, it's a useless word, no. Yeah. It's of no use whatsoever.
It's a can-do, aren't we? We're can-do people.
You know, if it's a worthy cause, you know, and, you know, it's hard to say no, isn't it, really? Yeah. But put it on the list.
Yeah.
So. I want to know which country you're most looking forward to going back to once we were able to travel a bit more.
Well, you mentioned Jordan. Mm-hmm. You know, Jordan has been very interesting because actually one of the places that I went to when I was there was Petra. I think they call it the seventh wonder of the world. People would probably recognise it from one of the scenes out of Indiana Jones. Treasury.
It's a film I've never seen. It's very embarrassing.
And I've got to say, you know, until you've been there and seen the scale of that place and realise it is the seventh wonder of the world, and it's probably a place I'd like to go back to again, really.
But have you been to Lebanon?
No.
Which is somewhere I'd really love to go.
We have worked there. We have worked there. But I've also got, you know, I like Central Asia, you know, though there's some wonderful countries, Uzbekistan for the lamb has been, you know, a great place. We've been well received.
Is that where the space station is? I know my new husband went to somewhere and there was a space station there.
Do you know, it could be, but my life tends to be like home, airport,
hotel.
Okay.
Home, airport, or airport and home again.
Make sure you get to explore
because it's hard.
And if you make an error of staying somewhere like a Holiday Inn, when you wake up, you don't even know what continent you're on, let alone what country.
Well, I'll tell you a funny story. You know, I used to travel so much, and in the early days, I could be in three or four countries in a week, and I'd be back on a Friday, unpack, repack,
it's
and Saturday
very
I'll be
tough.
Fine.
Yeah.
So I'd come back sometimes, and the immigration guy would say to me, okay, where have you just flown in from? And I couldn't answer the question because I forgot where I'd been. You know, I'd wake up in a hotel room sometimes in the middle of the night thinking, where am I?
Yeah.
And I had to retrace my steps back to where I'd been, you know. Yeah.
That's very, very tough. I mean, I still haven't unpacked from my camping holiday in Dorset, which was about 3 weeks ago. It's still there, sitting there waiting. But I think, you know, what we do is if we do a conference or something, we always make sure we tack on, which is why Paul says we had lots of holidays in the old days when we could travel. So we would go somewhere, work for 3 days, and then tack on a week doing something, and like a very fast week.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, you know, it's quite mentally challenging when you're sort of, say, running a five-day course in different countries.
Yeah,
the rest
exhausting.
Of it. So it is exhausting. And, you know, many people ask the same question.
But then that's why you need the downtime.
Yeah, but you want to sort of get home, really, particularly if you're
training a lot.
So a nice
cup of tea.
Yeah. But the other thing is, of course, when you finish, it doesn't stop there because you're doing magic in the evening for various people and so forth. So, you know, and all that starts
that's
again.
That's just the wife.
Yeah. But no, I mean, I've been so blessed with meeting so many people since 2010. You know, people. I wish I'd have kept a diary.
Yeah.
I wish I'd have kept a diary.
We said the same, a travel diary.
And I, mind you, if I'd have put some entries in, I'd probably never been allowed to travel certain countries again. But I wish I'd have kept a diary. But what I can do is at least recount some stories. But I'm blessed by the people that have allowed me to go there, the people that I've worked for, the people that I've worked with, the people that have worked for me.
Mm.
And I can only say thank you to all those people that have really enriched my life over the last 11 years.
Laurie, it's been fascinating listening to you and all the things that you've been involved in and the fantastic platform that you've developed and the training courses. If people want to find out more about your business, what's the best place? What's the best website to look at?
Cognitasglobal.com.
Right.
And the platform is U360. But please give us a phone on the website. All the contact details are there, inquiries@cognitasglobal.com. Very happy to give you a demo, give you all the time that you need. It'd be a pleasure. Thank you.
Fantastic.
Brilliant.
That link is on the Campuses Radio website and will remain there. Laurie, thank you so much for that. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you and listening to you. Fantastic.
Thank you very much. It's been a great pleasure to be here. Thank you.
How do you sleep on a long haul?
I don't, actually.
Neither do
no,
I. It's so annoying. My new husband gets there, straight away he's asleep. I am wide awake. I don't know what it is on planes. I'm like hyper. And I've even tried antihistamines, which my GP gave me, because I said, oh, you know, I get there and I'm knackered.
It's always medical with Jules. It's always medical. She should have been a doctor with me.
But antihistamines, and all they do is you nod off with a glass of wine, of course, and then I get jerky feet and just wake up. So they don't work. My GP insisted they would.
I take my own pillow.
Yeah, okay. That helps. And a little spray of something gorgeous I take. I always take some lavender or whatever. But some people can sleep on planes and some can't, and it's very annoying.
It kind of depends on who you are and what you are. Then,
I've even flown first class and still can't sleep.
I'm reasonably tall and I hate planes.
Same as me.
Because long haul flights are always uncomfortable because there's nowhere to put your legs.
Yeah.
I often travel with John, who I mentioned, who's he won't mind me saying, he's 78, but he's like a 21-year-old a greyhound. And I've done a lot of travelling with John, and one of the reasons I think I have to stay awake is because I think he dies on every flight, because as soon as we take off, John's head goes down, and I'm worried about him, and he's just, like, static in, like, for whatever it is, 4 hours.
Yeah.
And then just as we go on approach, he comes to life again.
Ah.
So my heart starts beating.
So
starts
he's
beating.
Just a very, very good traveller then, isn't he?
He's the perfect traveller.
I have to watch 3 films on a long haul. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. I'm the same. I stack my iPad full of films. So,
yeah.
Cool. Just interesting as well, you mentioned just towards the end there about critical thinking.
Mm.
Do you remember a chap called Edward de Bono?
Yes, of course.
Sadly, he passed away a month or so back. Yeah. I had the pleasure of working with Edward de Bono a few years ago.
Wow.
And he's a nutter. He's a complete nutter.
He's the one with the six thinking.
Six thinking hats.
We've got the book at home.
Yeah, six thinking hats. Yeah. Really clever man. We were doing a series of seminars at a conference. And in the evening, there was a conference meal, and Edwin and I were sat next to each other, and he kept setting these tasks. He went, right, I want everybody to work out how to get this spoon on the ceiling.
As you do.
And you go, really? And you go, yeah. So everybody's having a go. We're throwing spoons.
I bet the hotel loved you.
Yeah, they were going bonkers. Yeah, they go, don't bend our spoons. They were doing all kinds of things. And he went, no, this is how I'm going to do it. And he got a napkin, a balloon, a piece of string, put the spoon in the napkin, tied it to the balloon.
It sounds like a Winnie the Pooh story.
With ice cubes in the bottom, and then suspended it over the candle, right, until the ice cubes started to melt, and it went up and landed on the ceiling. And we're all
going,
oh, that's stupid. It's completely bonkers.
Who would think of that?
Yeah, completely bonkers.
Did he buy a drink or did everybody
No, we all had
drink.
To buy him a drink, yeah.
I must dig his book out. I've got it. I used to work for a company's sales, and they made me read it ages ago.
As Helen said, Six Thinking Hats was his big thing. Well, I can't remember. There was a famous book that you started with. I can't remember what it was called now.
So how old was he, do you know, when he died?
Oh, well into his 80s, wow. at least. I mean, when I worked with him, which was 15, 20 years ago, he was knocking on a bit, so, yeah.
You know how he died, though, don't you? He fell off a ladder trying to get his spoon
back. Yeah. But listen, folks, we're kind of really at the end of another show. Have you got anything you need to read, Jules, before we go off air?
No, I'm fine. I was going to say that Locke Associates are saying the national living wage is currently £8.91 an hour, right, for workers over the age of 23, because we were talking about wages. And they are proud to have signed up as a living wage employer, as they believe in the importance of fair pay for all staff and the benefits of this to business. Well done, guys.
Cool. I want to tell you about a networking lunch for women in construction that's taking place during the Construction Southeast Expo. And the lunch is organised by Cheryl Corsbrook, and she's going to be in conversation with Amy Goff, who's from the Chartered Institute of Building, and Sue Nielsen, who's a successful entrepreneur. You can hear two successful women share their stories. 21st of October, great way for women to meet, share and network. ConstructionExpoUK.co.uk is the website to find out more about that. And that's taking place at the Construction Expo, which is at Ardingly, the Southern Exhibition Centre. Just trying to make sure I've got nothing that I need to impart for this week.
There is a concert on the 5th of September. It's a diary date by John Hamilton and the big band at Maidstone's Brenchley Gardens. There's a host of events there all through the summer, so please go to visitmaidstone.com. But the next one is the 5th of September, Sunday.
Absolutely. And nominations are now open for the Medway Food and Drink Awards. The proud sponsors of this year's Best Disability Access Award. Do you know a venue that accommodates for people with disabilities? Give them recognition they deserve at medwayfoodanddrinkawards.co.uk. And I think that's brought us to the end of another Business Bunker show.
I love the way that you sort of had the two guests with synergy this week. I mean, we've travelled all around the world today, haven't we? Global.
Are you trying to say I don't normally plan these things?
I just
throw them together.
Yeah, I think this week you've thought about it.
Surpass myself.
You've had your little thinking cap on.
Absolutely. Right. I'll be back on Thursday with a Business Bunker Extra show, and I'll be talking with Simon Pollard of Simple Life Circle.
Is he gardening?
And we're talking about gardens, the natural world, and
ponds.
And ponds and all things.
Utes.
And his new book, The View Over the Wall. So do join us 1 o'clock on Thursday for that here on Biz Radio. But I want to say a massive thank you to this week's guests, lovely Helen Neil Green of Our Moon Education. Helen, thank you so much. Laurie Day of Cognitas Global. Laurie, thank you so much.
Thank you.
To my sidekick, Jules Serkin. Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much. And Locke Associates, of course.
And to our fantastic sponsors, Locke Associates Group. Thank you all so much for joining us. We'll be back next week. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to Channel Radio.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
This is Channel 2.